and welcome to Rise of the Rule Lords Unchained. I am your immovable and unstoppable Rule Lord, Pete. And today we're going to be talking about an issue that can sometimes happen at people's tables, which I'm going to coin as table turmoil. As some of you probably know, when one person is in a room, everything is okay. But when another person comes in, sometimes there can be disagreements. And that only increases exponentially with the number of people. And sometimes at party tables, there can be disagreements where it doesn't just become PCs role-playing differences, but becomes differences between players. And today we're going to be talking about how you can try to mitigate that, get ahead of it, so that these problems don't turn into dead groups. Today, we're going to be talking with Eli Herman, the co-creator and editor for Deadly D8, a Pathfinder 2 variety program available on YouTube. Eli, I have one quick question for you. Was that pierogi worth it?
I would like to say that the audience will figure out whether that pierogi is worth it. Do I know if the pierogi was worth it? Maybe yes, maybe no. We will find out as this plot continues.
If for some really weird reason people are listening to my podcast but have not heard of Deadly D8, which would be astounding, what do you have to say to them about your YouTube show?
Yeah, so we started the YouTube show because we saw that there was not any short form content really in the Pathfinder 2E space on YouTube anyways. I still think there's not a ton of it, which I would love to see more people maybe come in. If you have any short form content ideas, you know, get out there, try to go with your creative pursuits. We started making animated videos talking about random subjects that were near and dear to my heart, like archetypes, items that I really enjoyed, and we just made little animated videos about them. It's expanded a little bit since we started. We brought a couple more people on the team. Now we have Victoria, who talks about Galarian lore in our video, in our series Visit Galarian. And then we also have James, who's been doing live programs and interviews to kind of help put a better spotlight on the Pathfinder 2E community.
Awesome. Well, it is a really great show. I still have Bag of Weasels stuck in my head every once in a while. What is your experience with tabletop role-playing game? Like, you're big into the Pathfinder 2 scene now. Were you doing anything before that?
Definitively not really. I'm a late in life tabletop role player. And I always like telling my story about this because I, for most of my whole life, you know, I had nerdy friends, you know, we did nerdy things. But when I looked at tabletop role play, I was like, no, that's not for me. I'm not that nerdy. I can't get into that. Cut to, I was probably, 24, and I played my first game of 5e. And I was like, nope, this is amazing. I love this. I want to do this for the rest of my life. So I'm sure there's no one listening to this podcast that isn't already in the tabletop role play, but I'm someone who came in, you know, thought that it wouldn't be for them and really fell in love with it. And ever since then, we moved then from, we played 5e for a couple of years. Pathfinder 2 playtest came out, and I had two friends that were very much into Pathfinder 1, and they said, hey, we want to try the second edition when it comes out. I said, sure, I guess. They said it has more rules. I was like, I don't know about that. And we started playing, and as someone who is a big mechanics person, so even before I was into tabletop roleplay, I always have been super intrigued with game mechanics and how things play out. Pathfinder 2 immediately caught me from that aspect because I was starting to, I saw the small ways that, in my opinion, Pathfinder 2E builds upon, you know, the kind of the classic D20 systems like 5e to give better explanations of the rules while also providing more options, which is what I like in the game. There were so many good options that that's what hooked me, and I've been about it all ever since.
You've played 5e and Pathfinder 2 then. As far as mechanics go, is there any huge differences between Pathfinder and D&D? I mean, we know that there's big mechanical differences, but are there any differences with Pathfinder 2E that increases or decreases the amount of role play between Pathfinder and 5E?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that, I mean, role play, as someone who's always been a huge advocate of role play, 70% of it is, you know, what you put into it. You know, you can role play no matter what system that you're playing. And I'm not here to espouse that 2E is a better system for role playing than other systems necessarily. But I think what it does for me and what it might provide for other creative people coming into the hobby is that it gives me so many good hooks from which to derive, you know, creative inspiration. You know, I take a celebrity archetype, let's say in 2E. Now I have all of these mechanical ways to tie my character to being a celebrity and doing that performative role play part of it, while also giving me just any, you know, the lore tie-in as well. So I have, you know, the I can think about my character. How did they become a celebrity? What are their goals? What do they want out of the game? And that allows me to approach my character in a completely new way, which is awesome for the creative side of me.
So because Pathfinder 2nd Edition is a very mechanically inclined game, sometimes I do see some stuff about people putting mechanics over roleplay and how that hampers the overall group experience. People put the rules before the fun. What solutions do you think groups can do before they even start playing to help mitigate that?
Yeah, I think having open conversations with your party before you start playing is going to be it's the most valuable thing that any group could ever do. I'm probably going to keep coming back to this point because it really is so important as we're talking, but understanding the needs of your party, I think, is a really excellent place to start. We have folks in our group that play Pathfinder 2E just for the role play. Like, that's the main thing that they're concerned about. And then we have other people in our group that could care less about role play. And we understand that. So just going into the situation, understanding what everyone wants out of the game is just an excellent starting point for everything going forward.
What can people do to make their character be the character that they want to be, do what they want to do, but still suit the needs of the group?
I always find myself caught somewhere in between, you know, being somebody that wants to build an incredibly flavorful character and then somebody that wants to make, you know, an optimized character. I do enjoy, you know, that min-maxing aspect that I think attracts some people to the genre. But I just as much enjoy making characters that I can sit on my couch and think about for hours, you know, what they're doing, what they're thinking about the situations that occur in game. And I think something that players can focus on as they're building their characters is be on the lookout for those flavorful feats that speak to you, and don't be afraid to take them. An example I have of maybe something that mixes the two mechanics really well, there is a feat called Orc Ferocity, which is fun. It's a classic gameplay mechanic where if your character was going to go down, you can use a reaction to instead go down to 1 HP instead and, you know, stay up. That is a mechanically good feat, but also I think absolutely fantastic vehicle for role play as well. You know, your character gets hit with something that would have taken down, but they push through it and they keep going. And for a really long time, I wanted to use that feat because it like spoke to me, but I was struggling to build an orc character because the way their stats work didn't always fit into the builds I was doing. Our most recent campaign, I said, screw it, I'm doing it. I want this feat so bad. I think it's so fun and it's so in character that I actually took a hit to the ideal stats that I could have had just so I could take that feat and really develop the character that I wanted to make. And I would encourage anyone in any game, but especially Pathfinder 2, to not be afraid to take those leaps of faith every once in a while. Take feats that you just find interesting and you think will help develop your character. If they don't work out, that's why retraining exists. You can always change it out. And I would encourage GMs, especially for parties of new Pathfinder 2E players, to have a little leeway with that. You know, if characters need to retrain, get something else out, find something, a feat that works for them, you know, let them take it. Because we're still in the early stages of Pathfinder 2E, where I understand that people are figuring out the game. And part of that is going to be being flexible and welcoming and inviting to new players. And I think part of that is allowing them to choose the feats that they think are cool.
For me, when I'm running my group, I know in the first couple sessions, I kind of have this blanket rule, like, okay, if something that you thought was going to work out isn't really working out, like, I'm not going to make you do the retraining rules. Mm-hmm. Just like switch your feet up. That's fine. But yeah, retraining is a mechanic of Pathfinder that I think sometimes people forget about. It can really help people. Retraining is an important mechanic that people forget about a lot. And they think that they just have to kill off their current character in order to do something special. But no, you can essentially restart your character without, you know, having to sacrifice them. So what are some other things about the Pathfinder 2E system that you think people should keep in mind as they're designing their character?
Yeah, there's always a continuous conversation going on about, you know, the crunchiness versus the complexity of Pathfinder 2E. I do find that when we are presented with, so Pathfinder 2E has a lot of different actions that you can take, and there's certainly a learning curve when it comes to understanding those actions and everything that you can do, and that comes with time. So accepting that your character is going to develop over time and your ability to play the game is going to improve over time is a good technique. But also, I highly recommend anyone who has their character written out, they know all of the feats they've taken, to take a careful look at the actions that they can do both inside and outside of combat. You'll really, at least in my experience, you'll surprise yourself when you realize how many things you actually can do mechanically. I think sometimes it's really easy, especially in Pathfinder, actually, to fall into the thought that, you know, if there isn't a mechanical explanation for something, you can't do it. You know, I want to kick in that door. Is there a kick in the door action? No, but your GM can work with you to figure out an athletics check to kick down the door. That's a really simple one.
Right.
But also, as you're creating your character, you know, you're getting all of these feats that are often giving you new actions to use. Having those handily written down somewhere. We use Foundry right now for playing. Foundry has an excellent way to list out all of your actions for you so you can see them all in one spot. I think that's excellent. And just working to develop the game consciously and just working to intentionally develop, you know, your knowledge base of the game and everything that you can do within it. I find that as you open that door, as you increase the breadth of the amount of actions you can take, both inside and outside of combat, you're going to impress yourself with how much better you can cling on to the role play of things and do the kind of things you want to do with your character anyways.
To me, it seems weird that, you know, that discussion comes up of like, if there's not a feat or a spelled out action, like you can't do it. It's like the same as in Pokemon or Resident Evil, where they get up to a waist high fence, but you can't get past it because there's no jump action. So we're treating characters like we're really limiting them by not having, you know, room for GM fiat.
Absolutely.
To say, like, you know what, if you want to drag a body, just give me an athletics check or add the bulk of a creature's weight to your bulk. As long as you can carry that, you can do that.
I think that's the question of when to get granular with the rules, which is something that I feel like new Pathfinder players struggle with often. I can give a real easy example there. When we first started playing, we finished, I think, one of our first battles ever, and everyone was hurt, and we needed to treat wounds to get everybody back to full HP. And the system includes a minute actions. They have 10-minute actions. They have hour-long actions. These different time chunks that all are representative narratively of different things. So, you know, what does 10 minutes narratively mean to your game? What does an hour narratively mean to your game? When we first started, I remember we were going on a minute to minute basis, like, all right, for this minute, we do this, and then I'm going to treat actions. What's everyone else doing during that 10 minutes? And we spent and wasted so much time doing that. Just as, you know, new players who are figuring out the system, that's normal. Mm-hmm. That's going to happen whenever you change over to a new system. But as we played more and more, we realized that there are times when you want to really zoom in on those mechanics. And that is where Pathfinder 2E shines, because it at least provides you mechanics to do that. But there are plenty of times when it's a great idea to zoom out. You know, if you've cleared out a cavern, you know, the GM knows that that cavern was filled with monsters. They're all dead now. The players have free reign of it. As the GM, something excellent you can do is say, hey, you guys get the sense that the cavern is cleared out and you have as much time as you need to kind of figure things out. And knowing that, you know, if my character's down 10 HP, you know, someone else, my party is down 5 HP, I can treat wounds and handle that over the course of an hour or two. We can figure that out. We know when to just do a time jump to say, okay, fun is our main goal here. You know, how are we narratively telling a story that all of us are, that is maximizing the fun for everyone? And then where do we want to zoom in and where do we want to zoom out? That was the little point I wanted to make.
So when do you think it's okay for GMs to either break the rules or at least step back from them? Like, what criteria would you use for when a GM should look up a rule or just make a rule?
Well, one of the first things I would do is just ask your party. I mean, I am a huge, huge proponent of every TTRPG being a collaborative storytelling effort. So sometimes there's this perception that the GM is the person who's writing the story, doing all the narration, telling the players exactly what happens, and the players are just responding to that. I think that's one mode to exist in within, you know, your TTRPG experience. But personally, I'm much more interested in situations where the GM might say something like, so you guys find yourselves, you know, let's going back to that cavern. He said, well, sitting in that empty cavern, you don't hear any sounds, but, you know that there might be some fighting going on outside. Which is more important to you, you know, spending the time to recover or figuring out what's going on outside? The players having that discussion and maybe working with the GM to find some kind of fun narrative middle ground. Like, hey, maybe the fighting's going on outside, but they're so distracted that we have a little time to rest. Talk with your group about how you might want the story beats to happen and then plan around that. You know, everyone has kind of their own different opinion on what this can look like. But once again, coming back to this point of talk with your table, figure out what that is and what the ideal is, and then go from there.
That was the whole crux of the episode about how to be a GM that I posted a while ago. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, that is probably the number one thing that, you know, I think solves just about every table problem that I've heard about, at least when it, you know, comes to clashes between personnel. What's the GM's role in mitigating table tensions?
So I think what comes to mind immediately is this is the time to talk about when you should have conversations with your GM outside of the game. I think generally 9 times out of 10, unless there's something so glaring that it needs addressed right there, if you have a problem, whether it be with another player at the table or the GM or whatever, finish out the rest of your game, do the best you can. Afterwards, reach out to that person. This is, again, just folding back into that talk with your party statement. But from my personal experience, something I can give is we've had more than once in our games, players choose to do evil characters, and that create a lot of tension. Because, you know, playing an evil character just comes with a little bit of baggage, typically, that player groups have to play with. I don't myself like to play with evil characters, but I absolutely see the allure of it, and I am all for people playing evil characters. But we've certainly had moments where we were talking earlier about, you know, what the narrative structure of your story, your campaign is going to look like, where, you know, we have a group of a party who is trying to, you know, complete a mission, to do the right thing, handle things in ways that logically make sense to their characters and their characters' ethics. And then you might have, for example, an evil character who has their own set of ethics, outcomes that they're looking for narratively. And sometimes there's a clash between those two things. Something I would encourage everyone to do is, and something that I had to learn, a lesson I had to learn, is learn to be okay with that. Learn to accept that every character has their own motivations, which may differ from yours in drastic ways. Mm-hmm. And that, from a storytelling perspective, is excellent because it creates friction. Learn to embrace that friction when you can. So if you're having an issue where someone in your party is being a jerk or something like that, that's one thing that just deserves a quick out of table conversation with them to address it and, you know, try to get over it. But recognizing that characters have different narrative character motivations, and that there will probably be a lot of times where those will be in conflict with your own, and getting into that, you know, it's like, oh, actually that's fun. I like that this person wants different things out of the game as me. And how would my character respond? I'd encourage that as well.
That's a common fallback that some people do of, it's what my character would do.
Yeah.
and that can cause a couple problematic things. I think now's a good time to mention something that, you know, maybe people skipped over while reading the core rulebook, is called the Pathfinder Baseline. Mm-hmm. That's a list in the Game Mastery chapter where it talks about how to handle difficult topics, but also things that you should just avoid all the time. You know, whether you're playing an evil character or a good character, you know, like probably the best evil campaign that I've seen, and I've talked about this before, was the Dimension 20 show Escape from Blood Volcano or something like that. It had Matt Mercer.
And I saw clips of this.
Matt Mercer Dimension 20. But every single one of those players was playing an evil character. They were basically on the side of Sauron from Lord of the Rings. You know, not once did they go into like, well, my character has to skip in 10 seconds if this word triggers you. They never raped anyone or put someone into slavery. It was all about like being on the bad side of like, well, I'm not going to do something unless I get paid money, or yes, I love to torture, but being like really being really campy about it. So there's definitely ways that you can create conflict, storytelling amounts of conflict, but not have to go into the very worst aspects of human nature to create that. But one of the big times when tensions can come up is not during roleplay, but during combat, because sometimes it can take a long time for your turn. And with Pathfinder 2nd Edition's 3-action economy, that can be even bigger, because now there's 3 things that you do instead of with 1st Edition, where you basically had 1 thing and then your turn was, but somehow it still took half an hour for a single round. So what do you think is the biggest thing that grinds games to a halt?
This applies to any game you're playing, but not being prepared for your turn obviously is the biggest one. And I do think sometimes that problem can be exacerbated in Pathfinder 2e, where you have to have 3 actions. So even if you know, okay, on my turn, I'm going to run up and attack them, I'll figure out that 3rd action later. Sometimes that can slow the game down, you know, because sitting there thinking about what, you know, you don't want to waste that 3rd action. Something that I found that works for me, and I would highly encourage for any of my fellow squirrel brain Pathfinder 2e players out there, write your exact turn out. So, you know, and realize that, of course, it's subject to change as the game and the turn progresses. But, you know, 1st action, recall knowledge. 2nd action, run up. 3rd action, attack. Having your turn ready to go, I think, is an excellent strategy for at least speeding up combat. And then just knowing your character, obviously, understanding, we talked earlier about what kind of actions you can do, what's available to you, having some kind of, you know, list handy if you're less familiar with the game or you're new to the game, of all the different actions you might be able to do in your turn can help speed things up. But also communicate with your team, or figure out the level of communication that you want to have with your team in combat. We vary sometimes. There are times where we're just like, take your turn, keep the game moving the best you can. Don't worry about optimizing every single little action, because 9 times out of 10 you're gonna win the fight. Spoiler alert, the game is tuned around players typically winning fights, and you know, not worth spending five minutes deciding if you should cast a spell or make an attack. But talk to your team about what you want combat to look like in terms of the communication that happens between players, because often in our combats we'll be like, all right, guys, I'm setting up to do this big, you know, disintegrate spell. Does anybody have anything that can lower their fortitude? Questions like that. It's something my group does. It might not be something your group does, but at least kind of understanding what that looks like and having the conversation beforehand. What level of communication do we want to have in the middle of combat? Because something that I found in my group works for my group is that when we have that higher level of communication, yes, maybe it's not something exactly our characters can do in the moment, have these, you know, conversations, but it helps us just get through the turns and get combat, you know, make it happen. And I think another big part of that is the mentality of what the game is to you during combat versus out of combat. Because at least for me, something I've had to kind of accept in a way is that the combat has been gamified more. You know, when I'm in combat in my head, I'm playing a little mini game, and I love that. I love for what is to me the mini game that is combat in Pathfinder 2e. Some people, combat is the game. Sometimes that's all they care about, and that's awesome too. I love that, and however people see the game is just perfectly fine. But recognizing that you need to switch modes, you know, switch modes from in combat and out of combat, and things are going to look a little differently depending on those 2 different modes that you're playing in. I found it's been important for me, but of course, expenses vary.
Yeah. So how can people balance being prepared with the pace of combat? Like, should people really just be going, I cast heal 2d8 and then I'm going to put a shield up and their turn is that fast? Or what can they do even when they're prepared to keep the sense of adrenaline going during combat?
That's an excellent question. I like that question. So use that time before it's your turn to think about what you want to do. And then what I would encourage is then think about the flavor of what you're going to do. Okay, so earlier in my example, I said, I'm going to recall knowledge. I'm going to run up and I'm going to attack. Now I know what my character does. Now think about how I'm going to do it. So my character sits and surveys the battlefield for a minute before dashing forward, pulling out their greatsword and slashing down upon the enemy. I think narrative combat is super fun. Again, understanding that combat has been gamified to different levels to everyone else. I understand that combat for me, I want that narrative buy-in. I want to know what your character is doing. What are they thinking? What are they feeling? That helps me become more attached to combat itself. And then that helps speed combat up because I'm getting that buy-in. I'm excited about what's happening. Oh, I want to figure out what I'm going to be doing on my turn and how my character's going to react to this change in the scenario.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts about a different game, Monster of the Week, that I finally got to play for a little bit is it's a very mechanically light game, and it's mostly based on narration. And one of the things I really loved about it was that the keeper, the GM equivalent, didn't make any roles. They just decided when the player would make a role. So, especially during combat situations, it wasn't saying, I want to attack. It was saying, I'm going to go up to this monster, kick his shins, and then try to distract him. And then the keeper would say, okay, that sounds like a kick some ass roll. So try that. But then it also sounds like a act under pressure roll. So give me that. So they described what they were doing rather than putting the mechanics first, trying to figure out what the character would do and then matching mechanics up to those actions. So I really liked that part of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I play Fate every week as well. That's the other system that I'm very much into. And I think it absolutely thrives on that improvisational sense of here's what I want to do. Now let's figure out the role. And 99 times out of 100, it's very easy to match a skill with the action that you want to do. A way that I can see bringing that kind of philosophy and that approach to combat to Pathfinder 2E is something that my party has been doing a lot more recently, actually, which is acknowledging when sometimes there's not always an exact mechanic for something or that we're not aware of the mechanic, but saying what you want to do first. And I feel like that really helps people get out of their head and get out of that kind of very mechanics-focused approach to Pathfinder 2E is my character goes up, punches them across the face and then, falls back. What does that look like mechanic? That's an easy one. It's a strike followed by, a stride. If you're a new player, try that method first with your GM who might be a little more familiar with the actions that you can take in Pathfinder 2E. Even other times when there's maybe not an exact mechanics, like a frequent one that comes up with my group is, grabbing some. So we might have like one of the larger characters grab the smaller, throw it on their back and proceed forward a little bit. Are there exact mechanics for that? Maybe ones I'm not aware of, but I don't think so. So 9 times out of 10, that just devolves into an athletics check. And then we talk as a team about how that might look and what kind of consequences might happen. I think being open about the consequences of actions is just another great thing to do with your party. Like, sure, in this situation, maybe your speed is halved, or maybe the weight of them, there's a chance that you trip and fall. And me as the player, I'm going to choose that chance of the trip and fall every time, because I think that's narratively fun. Make an athletic check, but if you fail this check, you're going to fall prone with that person on your back, and they're going to be prone as well. Now we've introduced a little bit more chaos, a little bit more questions into the actions that we want to take, and we've expounded upon the actions available to us to do the cool things that we want to do in the game and fit those mechanics around.
Yeah, and you mentioned grab. I literally told my group this the other day that I need to get the rules for grappled tattooed on my arm, because it's such a common move, but I forget the rules that you're supposed to make for it every single time. And I have to look it up again. Which brings me to my next question is, should players know the rules as well as a GM, or are there tools that they can use to help out? What is the level of knowledge that a player should have going into a game?
I don't think there's one right answer to that question, because it's going to look different. If we're folding a new player into our group, it's perfectly fine if they have zero Pathfinder 2E knowledge. I I can explain the game to them as we're going. Encourage, like we were just talking about, describing the action first and then finding a mechanic that fits to it. You know, that's easy to do. But if you're a team that's going to be playing regularly, I do think there's a certain responsibility to learn the rules. You don't have to be perfect. I'm the definition of somebody that forgets random rules from time to time. But I think as a team, it's important to help keep each other honest throughout the whole process. You know, if you know a role and somebody doesn't, don't be afraid to speak up. We bring up this person a lot, even though they're not in any of our videos. we have someone on our team that is probably the best roles lawyer I've ever met in my life. For whatever reason, they just have like a photographic memory. They know the roles in and out. And I've had the conversation with them. Hey, I'm going to forget things. Like, that's just going to happen. That's a part of, you know, playing tabletop role play games. If I miss something, let me know, because I want to play by the rules. And having that understanding with kind of your whole party can help things along a little bit. Like, you know, I know you want to do this, but there is a mechanic for this. Do we want to use it? Yes or no? And often our GM will be like, I know there's a mechanic for it. We're going to move past that. We need to focus on the narration, on the storytelling here. Let's get this over with. And there'll be other times where we go, oh, thank God, that's so important. You know, we need to get more granular with the rules here because it does impact how things are going to happen. So I think everyone sharing their knowledge base and pooling their knowledge base is just the best thing that can happen. And don't expect anyone to be perfect. And when those rules do, when you do forget the rules, just move past it and understand that it probably is not going to have any major impact on the game as a whole.
Yeah. So players can actually help with the rules decision.
Believe it or not, it is possible. and they shouldn't expect the GM to be completely in charge of everything. I think that is where I draw the line. You know, you should understand at a minimum the mechanics of your character, because Pathfinder 2e is amazing because it offers us so many different options in terms of classes and archetypes we can take. But there's a point where it's unrealistic to think that the GM would learn every little in and out of these classes and archetypes. And that's where I think you do have to step in and know your character.
Like that brings up the issue that can sometimes happen of rules lawyering, of getting into argument with either other players or the GM because of some kind of disagreement. And I think that the GM always has the final say, but I don't think that what I think some GMs can have is a little bit of God complex and saying, well, you don't get to weigh in on this. I'm more than happy for my players to look up a rule while I'm trying to figure something out and like correcting me. Or sometimes they have been the best help. Like you said, you have a player with a photographic memory. I also have a player who just for some reason knows these things as soon as it gets brought up. So like what can both player and GM do when perhaps there is a very important rule decision to be made where, you know, it could be the difference between a player dying or completely TPKing the party.
There are absolutely times when stopping the game to look up a rule is important. I think you do have to have that baseline of knowledge of knowing when that's important. You know, bleeding rules. I'm taking bleeding damage. My character is wounded too. Next turn, I'm going to take that bleeding damage. Does that mean I die? And what can I do to prevent that? Which there are a lot of different options to, you know, get a character back up. That's a kind of classic example we've had to deal with. But that the line in the sand that I usually would draw was if, you know, character death, if an action or inaction could result in character death and you know there's a mechanic for it, take the time to pause and figure things out if that's something that your party is concerned about. But it's a group effort from everybody to know when to raise your hand and say, oh, wait, I think we should take a pause here. And I also think it's the responsibility of the group to be okay with taking a pause. You know, narratively, we want our games to be fast paced, or at least I, you know, often want my game to be fast paced, narratively driven, having fun, doing all the things that we want to do within the game. But there are times when you have to step back and figure out where the dice need to be rolled.
There is some, you know, debate about that it's called table talk for some players that haven't heard of it, breaking out of character and discussing mechanics. And there's some people who are ardently against it, and you know, some people who are for it. So like, when is table talk something that you want to do? Like, should GMs be able to suggest moves to players if it'll help them out, or leave them high and dry for the player to have to figure out a way out of trouble on their own?
I think that really comes down to an individual player basis and a party basis. And this is, again, a time where having the conversation with your party beforehand is just so very important. Do we want to have high table talk or low table talk? And I know within my party that often varies person to person, because we understand we've been playing with each other now for 2 years. So I know that there are people in my party who just want to do what they want to do and move forward with it. They don't need any advice. They don't need any recommendations for what they should be doing on the turn. And then there are other people in my party that aren't, let's say, so focused on combat. And if they're really struggling, we might be like, hey, you know, you can raise a shield. There's a good chance that we're fighting a boss creature who could crit you, and raising a shield might be a really good option here. And they'll go, oh, awesome, thanks. So I think it really just, there's not one single answer to this question. It comes down to knowing your table. Or if you're playing with a new table of people you're maybe not as familiar with, taking a second to just bring up table talk. What does that look like here, and what do we want it to look like?
Yeah. So are there any tools that you recommend to people to have on them to help with that rule stuff? Like one thing that I think really stands out to me are the spell cards that Paizo published now, where, you know, you don't need to know every single spell, but if you get these spell cards, you can pull out the cards for the spells that you have prepared, and then you can just, you know, shuffle through your deck and see, like, this is a spell I want to cast, and these are the rules for them. So what tools do you think can help players and GMs improve their game?
Yeah, if we weren't talking on a podcast right now, there's video. I'd point right behind me. There's a stack of all of the spell cards that I bought for exactly that reason. I love having them in front of me. That's fun. I think there is absolutely something magical about just playing pen and paper, you know, having all of the physical resources with you available so that I don't need to be constantly switching between tabs. Sometimes I wish I did that more, to be honest, but for tools wise, Foundry has become our go-to. Just everything so easily can be tracked right there. Having, you know, and that digital tool can look a million different ways. You know, there's Wonders Guide, there's Path Builder, Foundry Roll 20, whatever you're playing on. Having things written down and automated goes a long way. So I know, for example, on Foundries, if I want to treat wounds, I click the button, it'll automatically make a skill check for my character to go for the heal. And then if it passes, it'll automatically roll the 2d8 to heal. And if it crits, it adds the 4d8 or whatever, you know, the exact mechanics are there. Automation goes a long way for me, and it also helps, I think, speed up combat a lot. But like I said, that's going to vary person to person. You know, if you want to keep everything pen and paper, just have those resources in front of you, whatever they might be, to remember and quickly pull up any kind of, you know, questions you might have about your character or the actions you have available. Does that answer your question? I know I don't have any more great specific tools that I use, because I am very much somebody that plays online generally, especially because COVID has actually really pushed our team to play online and figure out those digital tools more, which I think overall is a good thing.
Yeah, I do miss having my physical group.
Yeah,
I bought all the pawns. I want to use them.
Paizo is currently having a sale right now on Paizo. If you want to buy all the pawns, there you can get like 100 of them for like 10 to nothing.
The minis, yeah. Oh man, I had to fight with myself to not do one of those. I was like, that's half of it. Oh, they're so good looking.
They are so good.
Well then, so that's awesome. We just solved all of the problems with tabletop role-playing game in one single podcast. Who knew that that was possible? Well, it's been great to have you on. What are some things that you want people to know about that's coming up with Deadly D8 or projects that you're working on? And where can people find more about you?
Yeah, so our channel, Deadly D8, is available on YouTube. I very tongue-in-cheek say we're a variety program, because pretty much I just put out whatever the heck kind of content I feel like putting out from time to time. But we do a focus on the kinds of things, the We do a focus on the aspects of the game that we think are often undervalued, and we try to bring those to light because Pathfinder 2E, you know, the beauty of it is that it has so many fun options available. Sometimes finding the gems in there is what I enjoy the most out of the system, and I want to share those with people. So we do that. We do a live show every Friday at 9 or 9:30. You can check typically social media for that. And speaking of social media, we also have a Twitter, MacArthur_DD8, where you can find MacArthur's our mascot. A lot of people think that I'm MacArthur, but it's a team. We make posts throughout the Twitter account, you know, as a team, but we have a lot of fun on there. So give us a follow if that's something you're interested in, and give us a subscribe on YouTube if you want to check out our content.
Awesome. Well, it's been great having you. Looking forward to more of those awesome videos. And tell us what you thought, listener. Did you learn anything here? Do you have any other tips for players? Let me know at RuleLord2E on Twitter, and go to RuleLord2E.com for more ways to listen and send in your community use policy voiceovers. This is something that I am trying to get from the community so that I can have the little disclaimer in front of each podcast, but I want it to be from you guys. Send me something where, you know, you introduce yourself. Maybe you say hi to your group or a loved one, and then just recite the community use policy that's on paizo.com/community use, say RuleLord2E, and that's pretty much it. I look forward to hearing your calls. Yay. So until next session.
Don't let the rules roll you.
That works.
Wait, is that what you were looking for? I was waiting.
Yeah, that was it.
You're keeping that take, actually. That's the one. Yep.
Well, you're fighting in the dungeon, slaying dragons, number crunching, GM telling you this treasure ahead. Then you find a bag of holding while the plot it is unfolding, but you know you gotta make that bread. Yeah, you take all of your treasure, throw it in, no time to measure, run out quick before you wind up dead. And you run back to the city, sell your loot, you're looking pretty. Don't forget what this bard said. Cause when you're reaching for your sword among that big old dragon horde, yeah, your face will end up turning red. Cause the bag was cursed by witches, so instead of swords and riches, you'll be pulling out a weasel instead. Weasels, bag of weasels, it's a big old bag of weasels, bag of weasels, bag of weasels, yeah. Weasels, bag of weasels, it's a big old bag of weasels, bag of weasels, bag of weasels, yeah. Weasels, bag of weasels, it's a big old bag of weasels, bag of weasels, bag of weasels, yeah. Weasels, bag of weasels, it's a big old bag of weasels, bag of weasels, bag of weasels, yeah. Weasels, bag of weasels, it's a big old bag of weasels, bag of weasels, bag of weasels, yeah. Weasels, bag of weasels, it's a big old bag of weasels, bag of weasels, bag of weasels, yeah.